I will discipline myself to 10 minutes if I can use the podium.
Okay. All right now.
Thank you.
Ah, that's better. How in the hell did all these preachers stay sitting? You don't know till you ask.
We didn't break the rules. Like
you didn't break the rules. Yeah. How many of you have already heard my story?
We are
a few. You can clap. That's okay. Yeah. All right. Most of you have heard it. I've got a couple of things I can do here in the next 10 minutes. I can tell the story once again. And I will. It's on YouTube. And I'm proud to say there's a book coming out talking about it. And we can go that route. Or with your permission, I can preach the story in the next 10 minutes. Is that okay, Deacon Dan? Now there will be times when you will have to participate. And so, just in advance, know that for 25 years, I said, can I get an amen? And so, what we'll do this afternoon is, I will say, can I get a Darwin? So now you know your part. And another little trick I want to use from ministry is, I found it somewhat boring to always preach to the choir. And so knowing that this is being videoed, I know that there are hundreds, if not maybe thousands, of brave individuals, just like the ones that are on this platform, that will see this video. So we're going to have a small evangelistic meeting within the next 7 or 8 minutes, and we're going to give a call out to the doubter. Can I get a Darwin? This is going to work. You'll notice the ushers will be making their way.
The doors of the church will be open.
It's full circle for me to be here this afternoon. Brothers and sisters, it's truly a privilege. If you've never heard the story, if you've never lived through this somewhat and sometimes sad tale, I want you to know there are some high points, so just stay with me as we make our way through this journey. There were ups, there were downs, and I regret to say there were ins and there were outs. There were times of being somewhat disillusioned and confused, but always, always being moved and motivated and inspired, if you will, by love for humanity and a love for truth. From the very beginning, at the earliest age that I can remember, I was surrounded by religion. And not just any religion, mind you, but the religion that I'm obviously enjoying at this moment. Good old-fashioned, heartfelt, southern fried, barbecued all the way to the bone, Pentecostal religion. Can I get a Darwin? I'm going to tell you, it's something a little bit better than the Baptists have ever been baptized with. The Pentecostals have got a method that the Methodists maybe not understand. I'm sorry, Sister Teresa. From the very beginning, I was surrounded by religion. Some of my earliest memories was laying my head upon my grandmother's lap and her praying in other tongues for my earache. Some of the first words I heard were unintelligible. Much like some of the ones you'll hear in the next 3 to 4 minutes. And so you may ask yourself, how is it? Once again, not preaching to the choir, but looking out across the airwaves, you may ask yourself, how is it, doubter, that a person can come this far, that maybe he once stood in a Pentecostal pulpit and preached what he believed to be the gospel, but now he's here somehow celebrating the notion that the future may be one day free of religion. Can I get a Darwin?
Darwin!
And then those that are here that's never experienced this may be asking yourselves, how can someone who seems to be so tall and good-looking, handsome and... When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. Haven't you ever been to church? You may be asking yourself, how is it that someone who seems to be so intelligent could ever believe such foolish things? I'll tell you, many times it has to start on your grandmother's lap. And a brain becomes wired, and reality becomes skewed, and lives become shaped, and decisions are made without always having the best information. Can I get a Darwin?
Darwin.
So for 25 years, I traveled down that path, and I will tell you, doubter, I wanted the same thing that you've always wanted. I wanted God to be just as real to me as you're real to me. I wanted the creator of heaven and earth to move into my life and to relieve in any way possible the sufferings that I was experiencing that I saw so many of my loved ones experiencing, because I always loved humanity and I always loved truth. Can I get another Darwin?
Darwin.
Obviously, I wouldn't be here wasting your valuable time if I had found what I was looking for. Now, there's a reason that I tried so hard to find what I was looking for, because starting off from my grandmother's knee, I had been told that there was no hope outside of faith. I was told that there was absolutely no way to ever have happiness outside of faith. I was told that only within faith would you find a joy that was unspeakable and that was full of glory. I was told that outside of faith, humanity didn't have a hope. But I'm here this afternoon, not just bearing a message, but living in the proof of the fact that there is hope after faith. Can I get a Darwin?
Darwin.
I know, just like many of you, I was told that without faith, you would never have happiness. You would never be content. But what I found in the faith of my family and of the tradition of my childhood was that there was no stopping point. You could never be content because you could never be good enough. Not only were you not allowed to express your own individuality, but the name of the game was to pretend you were someone who had died 2,000 years ago. And how could you ever live up to such a standard? So there was no contentment in religion. No wonder we seek the freedom that we desire from it. I'm here to tell you that I'm living proof that there is happiness after faith. Now that's when the ushers would know to make their move. There's still room in these pockets for you. I was told that there was no positive outlook without faith, that without God, without religion, there was no reason to even dream of a positive future. It would be gloom and doom. It would be the apocalypse every day of the week without religion. But I'm here to tell you that I've got more optimism flowing out of my heart now than I ever had. And it's because of conventions like this. It's because of groups made up of young and old, black and white. Every single aspect, the whole broad spectrum of humanity is now being represented in a secular movement. And there's hope and there's optimism where there never was for me in religion. Can I get a Darwin?
Darwin.
The last 2 points would be this. If you're not paying attention, I'm spelling the word hope. Because there's hope after faith, and it's the name of my book, and I want you to remember that.
Right. Ooh, honey.
P stands for perseverance. The greatest damage that religion has done to humanity is that it has taught us that it's okay to be passive. It's taught us that we can somehow clear our conscience and not truly be our brother's keeper by simply bowing a knee and whispering to an imaginary friend, and that somehow that's good enough. It's taught us that there's a divine plan, there's something larger and bigger than us, and this whole ball of wax is completely out of our control, and there's nothing we can do about it, so why should we, other than maybe pray? But I come to you and say, there's hope after faith. And this hope that I have after faith has made me persevere. It's made me persevere through the worst year of my life. In May of last year, I reached out, and my own personal Jesus, Dan Barker, reached back. That one belongs to you. He told me every time I say that, I owe him tithes. And so through this last year, by leaving this career, if you will, and coming out publicly, I've lost friends. I've lost family, including my marriage. I've lost finances, total bankruptcy. As a matter of fact, I have a hearing the middle of next week about the bankruptcy case. And I've lost favor throughout the community. I was our mayor's chief of staff. I was the director of community service. Imagine that, somehow politics and religion mixing. And all these things are now gone. And what is a preacher to do if he can't pray anymore? He's to be a good human being and to persevere. And I'll admit to you, with the help of friends, with the help of the Clergy Project, with the help of Dan Barker, with the help of so many beautiful people like you, I have found a strength that I didn't know I possessed because I had been giving the credit away to the wrong person. And last but definitely not least, we're told in this country, in the 21st century of all times, we're told that without God, you can't be good and you can't be good to your neighbor. And what I have found is just the opposite. In hope, E stands for empathy. Because religion gives you a different E. It gives you an ego. And it makes you feel special. And it gives you an excuse to overlook the sufferings of so many other people because it's really God's problem and it's not your fault if somehow you are more privileged than the next guy. And so now that I'm out of religion, I have more empathy for the rest of humanity than I ever had. So I don't know what my time is and I don't know if the plates are full. But what I will tell you, and it's what I say to you doubters that are hiding behind the pulpit. It's not easy. It may be worse than you can imagine. But I can assure you that if this little Southern fried preacher from the backwaters of Louisiana can do it, then for everyone, everywhere, there's hope. After faith, can I get a Darwin?
Yeah. of just really interesting coincidences over the last few years, because Teresa and I grew up 30 minutes from each other. We went to the same school. We both went to Stanford University. I arrived there just after she finished. There have been many other stories like that. We have a member of the Liberty Project who, when I saw his profile, I saw a few things that looked familiar, in particular, the location. And so I messaged him, well intended, the Liberty Project. And it turns out he was our pastor. She grew up Catholic. And so as a Southern Baptist, we had to compromise. So we went to the Episcopal Church. And he was an associate pastor there, one of three. And he was our favorite. So I was very happy to see that he had become a member of the Quaker Project. And there have been other situations like that. Dan contacted me back last November. So this was just about, a month after the public website went online, and said, hey, there's this new member of the Clergy Project, and he lives somewhere near you. So here's his email address. Maybe you two could connect and talk. Okay, that'd be great. So me and Scott, we start emailing each other, trying to figure out if we might be able to get together sometime. And this goes on for about a month. Turns out he goes overseas a lot, does a lot of tours. And one day he calls me and he says, we need to just make this happen. So why don't we try to get together for lunch this week? Okay, so where do you live? Well, I live in Puyallup. And I said, really? He said, well, I live in Puyallup. I live in South Hill. He's like, you're kidding. I'm like, no. I said, this thought would be really easy. So where we be able to maybe meet for lunch? He said, well, I live out near Graham in this neighborhood called Silver Creek. So turns out he lives right around the corner. So a month goes by, we're trying to connect, and finally, walked. I sat in my study and had a cup of coffee while we talked. His brother actually is a new member of the Kirby Project as well. One real quick thing. Rich, are you out there? Rich, stand up. Rich Lyons and his partner, Deanna Joy, are here. Rich is also a member of the Clergy Project. I feel honored to have invited him to join the Clergy Project. He and I met through a group called the Tacoma Atheists. But Rich and Deanna Joy do Living After Faith, the podcast. Oh. And if you've heard any of those podcasts, you've probably heard several of us up here on there. And Living After Faith is the official podcast of Recovering from Religion. And so if you get a chance, please look up Living After Faith and take a listen. There are a lot of different podcasts with some really good interviews on there. So well, thank you. Well, my story, I'll tell you, is I feel very fortunate. And I'm only going to tell you a little bit of it because I want to get to a very, very important point for me and why I'm here. I did grow up in the church. I grew up a Southern Baptist. I was raised in the church. I became a very active member of my church when I was a young person, when I was a teenager. By the time I was 18, I was licensed by my church as a Southern Baptist minister and was already serving in my first church as a senior in high school.
At my high school, and I know that all of you will enjoy hearing this, being that it is directly opposed to the very principles of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. In my senior year, me and a good friend of mine started a prayer group that met in our school auditorium every week. And so it's still going today. And it started with us, one of my many regrets from my past. In undergrad, I was the president of what was then called the Baptist Student Union on campus. It later became Baptist Campus Ministries. I continued to serve churches part-time and full-time for 13 years. What changed for me was going to graduate school and being challenged by issues around diversity. Comparing specifically what I learned in this process of graduate school to be true about people who were different, in particular people who were gay, and how it flew in the face of everything that I had believed and had been taught from the Bible. And once I decided that that was wrong, that the Bible was clearly wrong on that one issue, the next question was, well, then what else is it wrong about? And that's how it all started. Now, my process was a 10-year process. And for most of those 10 years, I lived in denial. Many of the members of the Clergy Project will tell you that there was a period of depression that they went through. Because letting go of something that is the foundation of your life is a very difficult thing to do. And we have many members who have many stories that are just like Jerry's. That is why I'm a part of this. As a screener, and Teresa and Jerry, you know, would be able to, you know, share some of the same things, but as a screener and hearing, you know, somewhere around 50 or 60 different stories over the last year and a half, or over the last year, there are so many heartbreaking stories. And, you know, the purpose of the Clergy Project goes beyond just being an emotional support group for these people and trying to encourage them and give them a place where they can communicate with like-minded people. We want to be able to make a real practical difference for them, for those active clergy who are struggling to get out or who have gotten out only to find that there are many, many challenges that they didn't anticipate, not only with family and friends, but financially, certainly. You know, the Clergy Project wants to be able to do more. We want to be able to give scholarships for re-education, vocational training programs. We want to be able to give hardship grants. And so, as a member of the board, the acting board, as we approach incorporation, I feel so honored to be here because this organization, as well as the Richard Dawkins Foundation, has very graciously agreed to be a conduit for us. And it is through the Freedom From Religion Foundation that we have already received some donations that have been designated for the Clergy Project. Well, it's a start, you know, but we've got a long way to go. And I'm sitting here today feeling extra happy because we have wanted to go ahead and be able to help people if we could. And it's only because of the Freedom From Religion Foundation that we can. So I am going to officially, on behalf of the Clergy Project and the Freedom From Religion Foundation, give the first recipient of a hardship grant to Jerry DeWitt. Did I do okay? And that is it for me. You know, being able to be a part of something that's helping people who have not been as fortunate as I have in my journey, because I made a smooth transition into a secular career, and I truly am blessed. Sorry, old habits. And fortunate, I realize that. And so I want to be a part of something where I can help other people. And so I thank Dan, I thank Richard, I thank Daniel Dennett, I thank Linda, and I thank you for making the Clergy Project a reality and for allowing me to be a part of it.
It's like having a new life brought into the world, an organization that's doing something real. Elizabeth Cornwell, also with Richard Dawkins Foundation, has been intimately involved with Linda LaScola and the screeners and the board members, and slowly bringing the group up to where we can make a real difference. And with the foundation being a conduit for donations, and the Richard Dawkins Foundation putting up a lot of money for the web page and the maintenance of all that. It's become truly a kind of a global, kind of a group project. And so it's a little start, Jerry. We'll, you can pass the hat at the next speaking. That's one thing we're all good at is, you know, taking a collection. But I wanted to ask you, we don't have much time left, and that's fine. I think we'd rather just hear what they have to say. But I wanted to ask you if you have an opinion of what percentage of acting clergy today are sincere or hypocritical? How many of them are truly believers, do you think, in your experience? I was sincere, but I know there was a bunch of phonies in there. So do any of you have any comments about what you think, in your experience, is the level of hypocrisy among ministers? No? We can grab that one.
This one doesn't work.
It doesn't work. I'll say that, you know, I was very sincere. I was, you know, if you watch American Idol, Randy always says, in it to win it. That was me. Not to win it, but to win you. But since I've come out, I've had so many pastors, male, female pastors, ministers of music, missionaries, people that may or may not have gone into the Clergy Project or found out about it, just send me messages, private messages through the blog or through the website or wherever, sharing their story with me. And a lot in the same way that I did with Dan. I've also had children of ministers who've contacted me and said, help me, I'm an agnostic, help me, I'm an atheist, or I'm struggling. I've even had about a handful of wives of pastors who have contacted me, I think because I'm a woman, but saying, my husband is a XYZ pastor, a Pentecostal pastor. He is so on fire, and if he knew this, it would be over for us, and I would be devastated. What do I do? And that's when I honestly admit I don't have any answers. So I know that it exists. I know that there are plenty of pastors. I know there are plenty of clergy people that are still in the pulpit. I know it now more than I ever did, and their families. So does that make them a hypocrite? I guess technically, based on the definition of the word, but they're struggling with it.
I would say the word sincere is, you know, probably causing me a little hesitation, simply because in the African-American tradition, the idea of God, the church, what have you, is seen as intimately connected with the struggle and the progress of Black people. So I actually think a lot of the former colleagues or friends that I have are actually believers. They would not begin to question or reject the idea. And as you know, those who do are seen kind of as race traitors. And particularly more difficult for Black women when they have come out in this regard. Because just in terms of society, Black women are penalized more so when they, or women even penalized more so when they reject faith, the idea of faith, the idea of God differently because of just the normative kind of gender roles, identities that women have had to play in time and history. So, you know, I would say that many of the people that I know we went to seminary with and what have you actually see me, are believing, you know, I wouldn't say that there's a big percentage of people who are in and they want to come out. I mean, hence, I remember when I came in, I asked Robert how many Black women or Black folk in general are part of it, and he kind of said, you know, it was like, I'm not really sure, but I mean, that kind of was an indication to me that perhaps there are not that many. And there's a reason for that. You know, class, race, gender, sexuality, all is tied into one's social location and an ability to either have faith or not. So it's really a complicated thing, I think, a question for me to answer.
Well, Robert wouldn't know because only one or two people know who.
Right.
We don't ask skin color, do we?
Yeah, but, right.
In any event, it's anonymous.
Right.
You're talking about people. Somebody like Adam, who I referred to earlier, who Adam has been the administrator for the forum, doing all the grunt work for the forum, and it's been 2 years now. And Adam, he's in Tennessee. He can't leave because his wife is disabled and it's a pre-existing condition. He needs the health care. He can't just leave the ministry. And he's thought about it and he's tried this and he's tried that and he can't. And he cares about his family. He loves his family. He actually told his son and his son was happy to hear. But he hasn't told his wife or daughter yet. And he's still in that community, still preaching, still having the stature as a minister. He gets up and preaches on Sunday morning, and then he comes to his office on his laptop and emails us, "You won't believe the crap I had to say this morning." And I wish I could find a way out, you know? And Adam's just one example of a bunch of others. But do either of you have a comment about the level of hypocrisy or sincerity within the ministry?
I was a Lutheran pastor for 30 years, and in Spokane, everybody knows I'm an atheist because of an interview on CNN and because it took the police department to court. And, you know, I don't have one person that has ever come to me saying they have lost their faith. And I really, and I don't want to be preaching about the goodness of the Lutheran Church, but I think there is a benefit in the fact that the Lutheran Church has always been very honest about recent biblical research and criticism. And we were very open to talk about that in seminary, and we were open to talk about it later. And I was frequently accused of psychologizing the scriptures. And I won't try to explain that, that takes too long, but I would see the psychological aspect of the scriptures and preach on that. And so, I don't know. I do not know of one person that has come to me and said, I have lost my faith. They all know I'm an atheist, and they pretty much leave me alone. Not always.
Well, you know, in the Southern Baptist Church, and, you know, and it's a very, very large denomination, and it may still be the largest Protestant denomination in the country in terms of numbers. Now, out here in the Pacific Northwest, you wouldn't really realize it, but in the South, Southern Baptist churches are like Starbucks. There's one on every corner. And usually this one and this one used to be one, and they split over some division. But, you know, the question, though, I only have one person that I know from my background who I know does not believe in God any longer. And so they were honest with me about that, and with some other people, but they remain in the ministry for their own reasons, philosophical reasons. But what I've seen more of, I think, Dan, is that I think what happens for a lot of ministers is they may start out in a more conservative denomination, and as their thinking evolves, the way they rationalize or the way they reconcile those changes in their thinking about the Bible is they just move to a different, less conservative denomination. Right, and so you may have someone, you may have someone who may start out as a Pentecostal or a Southern Baptist or something, but they move to, you know, the United Methodist Church, or they may become an Episcopal, you know. So I think that happens probably a lot more than even, you know, just getting out altogether.
Is Jimmy Swaggart sincere?
I'll ask him when I see him.
If the question is sincere versus hypocrite, if I'm not mistaken, the best definition of a hypocrite is an actor. I think that's the root, and that's where we derive our cultural connotation from it. My answer would be that every minister I've ever known is a sincere hypocrite. Sincere. He's sincere and is forcing himself to act in ways for the benefit of the congregation, or because, here's the loophole. This is my opinion, in the modern day evangelical theology, it really doesn't matter what you believe. What matters is what you proclaim. Because faith is what adults call pretending. And so you don't really have to believe it. You just have to live it. You have to proclaim it. You have to act as if you do believe it. And that has been construed into believing. And so a minister can go to bed at night with great confusion and great concern, and maybe feel somewhat hypocritical if he is introspective enough. But at the same time, because of his love for the community, his love for the church, his love for religion, his love for church, his love for theology, all of these other relationships that he also has, he may feel as if it's the better thing to do to keep pushing forward and to keep making those declarations. How many of you have ever been in a religion that it's about your profession of faith? Right? A few? That's the deal, is that you're professing something. And so there's an underlying of fake it until you make it. And I think that's what creates the conflict of terminologies. Yeah.
I think we all hope that there's many.
Yeah.